Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. Today we bring you a debate between the two candidates vying for Onondaga County Executive this November. County Executive Ryan McMahon, the Republican incumbent, has held the office since last November when he was chosen to fill the remainder of Joni Mahoney's term. He has previous experience in the Onondaga County Legislature, serving as the chairman of that body, and also the Syracuse City Council. Tony Malavenda, the Democratic challenger, has a background in business, co-founding and co-running Duke's Root Control, a sewer-related company operating in 48 states. He's been very active in the Syracuse community and has served on a number of boards. This is his second campaign for public office. In the recent past, each of these candidates has been on the program individually, and you can find those interviews on the Campbell Conversations webpage at wrvo.org. Now, this is a debate of sorts, hopefully more a conversation emphasizing contrasts. There won't be opening or closing statements or timed responses. But with two candidates in only a half hour, I've asked each candidate to be brief and to the point and have warned them that I'll intervene if they are not. And as always, I wish we had more time. Well, welcome to the both of you, and I want to thank you for being here, but also for making this conversation so easy to arrange. I can tell you from past experience that that isn't always the case. So let's start with the topic of economic development. It's a huge one, obviously, in this area. And County Executive McMahon, I recognize that what I'm about to ask you is a big question, but if you could try to answer it briefly. In your view about economic development, are all types of economic development good, or are there some types that are better than others, and what are they?
So look, jobs are good, okay? So, and jobs are pathways out of poverty for folks. They are career ladders for others. And they're, without jobs in a community, you lose population. So I think from the standpoint of economic development, all types, is that good? Yes. Now, does government need to pick and choose what it wants to partner in and what clusters it really wants to promote? Yes, it does. And so when you look at our strategy over the last year, it's been a little different. We've re-engaged with our local business community. We've really understood what their plans are. What are your five-year plans? What are the capital investments? What are your workforce challenges? So we could really partner with some of our academic institutions and our workforce partners to meet their workforce needs. But in addition to that, what we've seen is there's certain economic clusters that it makes a lot of sense to invest in, whether it's logistics, whether it's certain types of manufacturing, whether it's our defense radar and aerospace cluster, which really we're second to none, no other economic cluster in the country, our unmanned air systems cluster, which the was part of our county upstate revitalization initiative. Certainly our eds and meds and our healthcare have always been the backbone of our economy here, and we're seeing young tech here. So certainly government, we need to have a diversified economy, and we need to pick and choose what we get involved with and where we partner. And I think we've been doing a pretty good job with that.
Mr. Malavenda, did you just hear anything that you would take issue with or want to add to there?
Well, I think that, you know, the problem is often government doesn't do a good job picking and choosing. And, you know, the flip side is tax breaks and what they cost and being able to decide, you know, what industry is going to survive, what industry isn't. Often those are political decisions more than they are actual economic or business decisions. We've seen that historically in this county, almost throughout my whole lifetime here. You know, when we support businesses like retail in a world of internet shopping, you know, we may be making a mistake. We don't always know where that's coming from. And, you know, as far as our educational and our healthcare industries, even the defense industries here, they have been here organically for the most part and also supported by the state. And that's great. But I do think that coming at this from the point of view of a business person who could have located his business anywhere really in the country, often you locate your business where it makes sense for you depending on the characteristics of that business. Workforce development is huge. You have to have employees. You have to have people that are educated. The more high tech, the more you need that. And you need people who are going to stay here. You need infrastructure that you can count on. You got to be able to count on the water system, count on the sewer system. And also in this day and age, you know, people are much more mindful of the community they're moving into. So when you have an aging infrastructure, when you're leading the country in concentrated poverty, that raises questions. And I think that we need to be a little more mindful of that, like creating a community development rather than economic development.
So it's more of the macro. Well, I want to unpack some of the things that you just brought up and some of the things that the county executive brought up. So let me stick, Mr. Malavenda, with you, and I'll come back, county executive, to you here in a second. But you hinted at this, I think, but I want to get a more specific answer. And this maybe is ancient history at this point in time. And maybe more of a city issue than a county issue, but I do want to try to get a sense of how you might see things differently, each of you. So, Mr. Malavenda, given the payment in lieu of taxes agreement, the Empire Zone benefits, the bonds, other forms of public support that were used for the Destiny Project, Do you think that was worth it?
I think it might have been worth it originally because it was such an environmentally compromised site. I think eliminating Oil City years ago was a good move. But there came a point when that investment no longer paid for itself. And I do believe that, for example, right now, not to shift gears onto the grid, but like there's an issue in Salina with the hotels in Salina, but we're giving pilots to hotels, 2 miles away in the city. And when you look at this historically, what we have is this thriving Destiny, but we have lost Shopping Town Mall, Fairmount Fair. You can fire a cannon off in Great Northern Mall. Pencam Mall is gone. Northern Lights is gone. A lot of retail is gone out of the center city. Even Urban Outfitters just left Armory Square to move out to the mall. So a lot of this is just moving money around, and you have to think about where has that investment gone. And I think that's hard.
So, County Executive, first of all, let me ask you the same question and then see where you want to go from this in terms of what you've just heard here. But looking back on it now then, does Destiny seem worth it to you?
Look, Destiny is the sixth largest shopping and entertainment complex in the country in Syracuse. We're not the sixth largest metropolitan area. And the other thing that I think is fundamental to this conversation is we run county government on sales tax, not property taxes. Our property tax levy makes up about 13% of our county budget, whereas sales tax is closer to 50%. So when you talk about the investments that you need to make to cover vital services, unless you want to raise property taxes, you need to support industries that create that economic impact. And certainly entertainment, tourism, we're kind of a leisure destination here in Central New York. Those are areas where you have to make investments, convention centers, convention business, really looking at, being aggressive with that. We got the bowling conference that was here last year, which really spiked the local economy. But certainly I did not negotiate a pilot agreement when I was a minority member of the city council. That was done by Mayor Driscoll. And so whether or not I would have negotiated the same deal if I was mayor, maybe, maybe not. But certainly Destiny has been a benefit to us. And to Tony's point, this is brownfield land that it really took a certain type of visionary and developer to be able to get this done. So I think overall that's the easy question. That's the question that everybody loves to Monday morning quarterback in this community. And there's not an easy answer to that because you're talking about one of the most polluted pieces of property in our county that now produces a lot of economic impact for our region.
So let me stay with you, County Executive, and I want to shift gears now to a different topic, which is about – it's related, I think, in some ways to economic development. Mr. Malavenda, I think, again, intimated this, so I want to explore it. It's the issue of where the donations to your campaigns come from. And Mr. Malavenda has made an issue in his public campaign of the fact that he hasn't accepted any corporate donations. And as of my last check anyway, you've received about a quarter of your donations from corporate donors. So explain to our listeners briefly, if you could, why those corporate donations are not going to affect how you would approach economic development.
Yeah, look, these are great Washington, D.C. talking points. And the reality is that when people donate to your campaign, you're talking about your family, your friends, your colleagues in your previous business life. You're talking about partisans, and there's partisans who donate to my campaign. There's partisans that have donated to Tony's campaign. And you're talking about many people who like what you're trying to do or like your vision. And I've received donations from thousands of donations, because I think for the most part people think we're doing a good job. And it's kind of shortchanging this talking point, shortchanges the argument. To suggest that somebody just gives you a donation for influence is kind of a sinister mindset. And those who make that, you can question back, what is that, how you would behave? Is that why you behaved? I've never questioned my opponent at all when he made campaign donations about the integrity of his donations. I believe that, you know, Tony's made campaign contributions to people we thought were going to do a good job. And I think that's probably the way that everybody should look at it. And when the play end of this is very curious, because almost all of county work is bid, and it goes to a low bid. So there's very little you can do. And then there's an RFP that looks at professional services, of which I, the county executive, don't sit on that RFP, and it's run by the county law department. So, look, and I get it's the silly season, and I get that these are good talking points that people use at campaigns across the country, but it doesn't hold merit for our administration.
So, Mr. Malavenda, let me ask you two questions in the same vein on this topic, and you may have other things you want to say as well, but that were, again, sort of brought up by the county executive. One is this fact of the number of individual donations. So it is true that County Executive McMahon has far more individual donors than you do, at least as of my last check of what was available in the data. Does that not show more grassroots support for his reelection? Question one. Question two, did you ever make a donation as a donor thinking that you wanted something in return? Because that would you know, indicate that this goes on.
Well, I've never made donations on behalf of my company to municipalities across. I mean, we did about 1,000 jobs a year. I've worked for 3,500-plus municipalities across the country. The amount of political donations that we've made as a company, and even me as an individual, you can pretty much count on the fingers of one, maybe two hands over 40 years. I don't accept the county executive's premise that this is all talking points. I think it's absolutely fundamental, because what this means is that the same people stay in power forever. We've had three elected county executives since I was a little boy. In almost 60 years, right? We've had one party in power, and that party is the incumbency. So Mr. McMahon in the newspaper was quoted saying he's going to spend $1 million. I called up everybody. I'm older than Mr. McMahon. I called up everybody I know. I talked to my friends and family. I went through my phone list, and everybody I asked gave me something, but I raised about $50,000. How in the world do you run against a $1 million campaign? And when you look at those individual donations that you're talking about, it's very difficult. You can't just look at the corporations, because the corporation is one thing, but then what you get is the president of the corporation, the executives of the corporation, the wives of the executives, or the husbands of the executives, right? That's where the money comes from. So when Mr. McMahon was appointed, like as you say, back in October, in 2 months, he raised somewhere in the neighborhood of, well, he went from about $95,000 to almost $450 or something like that. That's not individual donations. You can't get there with $50 and $100 donations if you're talking grassroots donations. So, and I don't know how, when people give you, you know, thousands of dollars, how you are not influenced by that.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with the two candidates for Onondaga County Executive, the Republican incumbent Ryan McMahon and his Democratic challenger, Tony Malavenda. County Executive McMahon, I did want to give you a brief chance to respond to some of the things that Mr. Malavenda said about the donations that you've received and when you receive them. And one way maybe to probe this a bit is, do you know what the average donation is that you're getting, like Bernie Sanders' famous $27? Do you know what it is?
Yeah, Grant. It seems like the two of you have studied my campaign filings more than I have. We're running a county government right now, so I couldn't tell you what that is.
Okay.
You have to raise a lot of money when you're running against somebody who has a lot of money. And Mr. Milovend has had a lot of success, and he has a lot of money. And so we have to raise money to be competitive. And, that's why we talk about budgets the way that we talk about them, is because we don't have the ability to write a check to our own campaign the way Mr. Milovend does.
So let me move on from there, and perhaps we can return to this at a later point. But I want to shift gears now and talk about a different topic, climate change. This was something when I asked different folks, what should I be asking you about? It almost surprised me in a way that I got this back a lot. Climate change is being called by many the greatest challenge of our time, and states and municipalities in the United States are now taking more actions to address this on their own. We normally would think about it as a federal government issue, a national government issue, but the federal government does seem to be dragging its feet in some ways and actually deregulating in this area in recent years. So, Mr. Milovend, are there any actions that you think that the county could and should be taking on its own to try to combat climate change?
Well, climate change probably is the central issue of our day. Right. But it's such a broad, it's a global issue, obviously, and a national issue. And I think that the one approaches climate change, the one approaches the other issues that are global, like racism and sexism, and that you start with yourself and you look at the county and you say, OK, what should and can we be doing here as a county? But actually not just talk the talk, but actually kind of walk it, even in our economic development. So in that new facility that is planning to be built out in Clay, are we talking about a sustainable building where we're taking a golf course and turning it into pavement and brick and concrete? And it may be a great idea, but are we talking about something with a zero footprint, a zero carbon footprint going forward? Are we going to start incorporating this thinking going forward that as a county we approach, zero carbon? We need that as a goal, but we also need that not just to set it and talk the talk and buy a few electric vehicles for county employees, but actually put resources to it and truly attack the problem. And I think the biggest area right now, the sort of shining example, is our lake. And that lake and Murphy's Island, I don't trust that they're still clean. It's an industry that I have familiarity with. It's, sort of tangentially related to what my business was. And we should be thinking about our sewer systems and separating those sewers and making significant investments in that so we stop polluting before we start worrying about putting in a beach, as much as I would love there to be a beach, right? And from my understanding, the soils on Murphy's Island are still contaminated with heavy metals?
I'm going to jump in here because that's not specifically related to climate change. I mean, it's an issue of pollution. So let's try to take these in turn. So county executive, going back to the issue of climate change, should the county be doing more things than it's doing now? What could it do?
Yes, it should.
Okay.
And so the one of the things we're looking at is trying to understand this in a comprehensive way where we can incorporate this into a county plan where we plan for these things. And we've done some things, and we've worked with solar in many of our buildings, Metropolitan Water Board and Aqua. We're looking at more solar projects right now, potentially out in Jamesville. But the number one thing that really, when you look at how climate change is impacting us here locally, it's not Onondaga Lake, it's Skinny Atlas Lake. And with what these change in this weather does to the nutrients then getting into the lake, creating these algal blooms. So we've invested and will continue to invest in various clean water initiatives. One of the partnerships we have is with ESF on a Propel initiative is what it's called, where we're trying to use unmanned air systems technology to really drive towards an algorithm that helps us predict when these wet weather events will actually trigger blooms, and then you can get ahead of the curve. So there's a lot to do on this. This is a it's happening, right? Whether it's warming 1 year, cooling the next year, depends. But there's a lot we need to do, but we need to do it in a systematic approach and taking the best science and the best data and trying to implement that into good policy.
So let's take now Onondaga Lake and Murphy's Island. Is it as contaminated still as Mr. Malavenda is suggesting?
I've spent more time on this issue talking to the same 40 people in the community about this. And the reality is we have a county policy to loop the lake, a loop the lake trail, returning the waterfront of that lake to the residents of this community that have never been able to use it. The concern was about the eagles, and when that really concern was addressed in a way where the U.S. Fish and Wildlife agreed with our plans, now these folks are pivoting back towards human health. We can never do anything that would impact human health. And so we have the DEC, we have our health department, the state health department. So if their soils are contaminated the way that some of these folks are now suggesting, we won't do the trail there. But again, this debate is pivoted every step of the way as we've overcome certain objections to trying to loop the lake through Murphy's Island.
All right. Mr. Malavenda, on that topic, I don't want to extend it too far because we only have a few minutes left, but if you could very quickly, one of the things that seems to me in listening to this debate about the lake is, you know, a brief history lesson on this will tell you that we've spent decades and decades and decades creating the problem. And so is it realistic to expect that we can, you know, get this area entirely clean in a generation?
No.
Okay.
And that's why I think we need to move slow. We need to move and take action, but we need to take the right action. You don't, you know, in my mind, investing in the beach and even the loop the lake, we need to work on cleaning the lake first. And right now, the biggest problem we have from a municipal point of view are the combined sewer overflows. In my company, we stopped literally hundreds of millions of sewer overflows. That's what we did for a living. And we need to stop that level of pollution and focus on that. I'd want to see not just safe levels according to the government, because I have seen, and I deal with this stuff, I've dealt with this stuff all of my life, government levels of safety dropping all the time. So what's safe today, 5 years from now, there's a new study out saying it's not safe later. Lead is a good example of that, right? Like now they're saying no lead in your system is safe. So I'd want to see it trending and not just be a safer level than the current bar. I'd want to see it trending that way for at least a decade before we start talking about the recreation side of it.
Okay, and let me get the county executive in on that. So could you address that trade-off that he's talking about?
I agree with Tony that science is always changing in your standards. Tony brought up lead. It's true. We had one standard that was acceptable, and now there's a new standard this year that we have to implement that is not acceptable to human health, according to our regulators. But the reality is when you're talking about the recreation around Onondaga Lake, we've successfully done the Loop the Lake Trail, built an amphitheater on waste beds, and we've done that successfully without impacting human health. And now the west side of Onondaga Lake with the amphitheater, the trail, the fairgrounds, it's an epic center of activity for our region. So we're just talking about continuing to loop the lake. Tony's mentioned the beach study. Look, the beach study was a grant from Assemblyman Magnarelli to study if it made sense to have a beach. That's what's happening. Everybody who knows me knows I reluctantly supported that in the legislature, but because it was a grant, we moved it forward. And I think I agree with Tony that even though I've swam in Onondaga Lake and I've...
Oh, yes, I did.
Yeah. I'm perfectly healthy today.
Yeah, that so you think.
There needs... Yeah, I'm pretty... a lot of people would question that grant. But the... But certainly, just because you can have a beach on Onondaga Lake does not mean that there's the demand for a beach on Onondaga Lake. So those are two things that are still a work in progress.
We really only have about 2.5 minutes left, so I want to squeeze this last topic in, and it's enormous. But just quickly, if I get each of you about a minute on it, County Executive, I'll stay with you. Syracuse has deep problems when it comes to poverty and concentrated poverty. And there's also rural and suburban poverty,
sure,
too. So what, in a minute, can the county do to help address this problem?
Yeah, this is we're the leading government in human services, and we need to lead, and that's what we've been doing the last 11 months. You've heard me talk about, Grant, our PIE platform. I know Tony has, where it's poverty, infrastructure, economic development. And when we look at poverty, we look at transportation as a barrier. We look at workforce. We look at education. We look at health, housing, and we look at early childhood. And we just put forward a budget that reflects priorities in all of these areas, but you need partners, and we're developing these partnerships with our nonprofit partners, our faith-based partners, our other governmental partners have been tremendous. The private sector is getting engaged. This week, we've hosted 3 lead town halls. We received an additional lead grant a week ago, so we're making small progress on this, and the data came out this week that said the poverty rate in Syracuse is the lowest it's been in 10 years. Hmm. So the reality is you can look at that and say we're still one of the highest in the country. We are, but we're going in the right direction, and we need to continue to do that.
We've only got about a minute left, but Mr. Malavenda, I'm assuming that you agreed with a lot of what you heard in terms of what ought to be done. Is there something you'd want to add to that or take issue with in terms of what is being done?
Yeah, I think that it's true. The county is the purveyor of social services for the most part. And so, you know, I look at it like, how did we get here? You know, what's our history? You know, we're number one in concentrated poverty, but we're also, depending on what study and what report you look at, we're anywhere between 4 and 7 and 10 in overall poverty. It's not just the inner city. And, you know, to me, I haven't seen anything truly innovative coming out of this county forever. You know, Mr. McMahon has been in office for a long time.
Okay, so 30 seconds, what's the one innovative thing that you would do in this area?
What I would do is I would come up here to the Hill, and I'd be talking to other people. I'd be trying to streamline and create opportunities for all of the different organizations that we have that are myriad, come together and work together and strategize together, not just apply for a grant together, but actually come up with a comprehensive plan in each area.
Welcome to this additional portion of the Campbell Conversations. This is a debate between the two candidates for Onondaga County Executive. It's the incumbent Republican, Ryan McMahon, and the Democratic challenger, Tony Malavenda. So one of the things that we gave short shrift to in the broadcast portion was this topic of poverty. We talked a little bit about it, but there's a lot more to say about it. So, County Executive, let me just return to you. Could you flesh out a little bit more of what the county is doing and will be doing in this area?
Yeah, and so we've been working with our partners collectively. Really, there was a study that came out from Rutgers University about 3 years ago, which really highlighted the issue here, and it really shocked a lot of people in this. And since that time, you've seen engagement, and you've seen new partners coming together on this. And look, we have to take exception to some of the things about innovation. We announced 2 weeks ago the first national partnership with Lyft for ride sharing for folks who cannot get central bus transportation to work, either if it's a third shift or if it's not on a bus route. The first in the country with Lyft doing this, where it's our responsibility in the county to pay for that central ride. And in this case, we're paying for a ride-sharing program with a pilot program of 3 businesses where 50 employees out of our Jobs Plus program are going to go. They're going to get hired. And then we're going to manage this Lyft program where these individuals, let alone are getting to and from work, but they're also able to get their children to child care at the same time. So there's innovation going on. We're learning from this. When you look at some of our plans, we've talked about the STEAM school, the city, county, state partnership there. This is really a workforce laboratory for so many businesses, and so many businesses want to come in. And this would be a county-wide school, and the county would take the lead on this. The city would transfer the building to the county. We would do the bonding. We would get paid back through rent. This is something that really focuses in on these core curriculums that all of our businesses need to keep the growth they've had here and continue to grow so our people really get these direct pathways out of poverty. And I think if you look at it, it all comes down to employment and getting rid of these pathways to employment. And I do have to come back to the fact that I feel like the clay opportunity in front of us now, which is the largest economic development investment in this community in a generation, was being poo-pooed a little bit. We have 60,000 human beings in Onondaga County.
Give just a thumbnail sketch of what that is in case some of our listeners don't know what you're referring to.
The state-of-the-art warehouse and distribution center proposed a $3.6 million square feet, second largest in the world, with over 1,000 full-time jobs and a $280 million investment where that would create 300 full-time construction jobs for over a year. We have over 60,000 people in our county, albeit some on fixed incomes because they're retired, that don't make $25,000 a year. And these jobs represent a range from $32,000 to $60,000 a year, over 1,000 of them. If you want to talk about making that poverty number in Syracuse and our towns, our villages, our region go down, let's get this project done, and you'll have 1,000 people immediately really moving up the career ladder.
So, Mr. Malavenda, you did mention in the broadcast portion about sort of the lack of originality in dealing with these issues that you asserted. So can you explain a little bit more about the kind of approaches you might take to poverty that would either complement or be different from the ones that the county executive just outlined?
Well, first, I think that, yes, I think there's a couple of significant things. But the first thing is that one thing that I've learned, and actually it's been reinforced being on a campaign trail, which I haven't done since I was a kid in my 20s. And that's that, you know, when we look at an issue as complex as poverty, that is a function of everything from the violence that we've had, the intense violence in the city, and all these children being killed, shot, right? And that just growing year after year after year, to our transportation needs, to the housing issues that we have. You know, it's easy in a campaign season to come up and say, well, we've got this program, we got that program, but I haven't seen anything truly move the needle here in a long, long time. And one of the things that's been missing is having the people at the table that are actually living it. People at the table who know what it is like to live in an area where their kids are hearing gunfire, or people at the table who are living in a place like Spafford or Elbridge that don't have broadband in their town, and their kids can't even do homework out there. So we need to include those people, and we have to recognize, we have to know ourselves. You know, we have to recognize what's going on. We have working poor here in the city. There's an acronym for it called ALICE, and honestly, I wish I could remember what it means. But basically, ALICE is the level of people who are working poor where they're still on public assistance in some form, even though they're working, right? In the city, it's 62% of city residents fall into that category. But it's not just the city. East Syracuse is 60, right? Mattydale, Salina, those numbers are high. They're in the 40s and 50s, half of the population. Even Fayetteville has an ALICE score of something like 24%, right? So I think when we're trying to truly move the needle on something like this, we've got to look at what are all the programs around the country that are working. Let's scour the country. And what I see, and I think this relates not just to poverty, but to almost every aspect of county government, is that we have about 18 universities and colleges around this town within an hour and a half drive of here, right? Many of which are world class, right? This school right here is the number one government school in the country, right? We have an R1 institution in SU. It needs to maintain that R1 status. We should be accessing and leveraging the know-how of these institutions to help us. We need help. You know, that's what Pittsburgh did. They created a consortium with Carnegie Mellon and the University of Pittsburgh in Allegheny County. And Pittsburgh is like the shining star. I know they're a bigger city, but they were hit by globalization, their steel industry. They were a one-industry town. They lost it all, and they have, like, risen like a phoenix out of the ashes, and they're not the only one, but they did it with that help. And what I believe is that until you live it, you know, it's easy for me to think I know what's going on when I read about it in the newspaper or watch, you know, the news at night, but until you walk with the OGs down on the south side and meet some of these parents, some of these mothers who've lost their 16- and 17-year-old children, you don't really know.
So, county executive, I want to give you a chance. Has the county made efforts to generate those kind of conversations and that knowledge?
Grant, you know, you probably know this better than any. We have a direct pipeline into the talent here. My deputy county executive is a teacher here, and we hire a lot of graduates of her class every year. In our budget now, we have a service learning pilot program with Syracuse and Lemoyne going in to create a service hub in some of our poorest census tracts. I have a vast array of experience, and so does my opponent. But one of the things I have is I'm the only person that's ever been a city councilor who's represented poor neighborhoods, working class neighborhoods, and middle class neighborhoods, a county legislator who did the same, and then now has been county executive. I understand the city budgets, and to kind of focus some of these problems just on county government when many of them are so much more complex, from state regulations to federal regulations to city performance, it makes sense during a campaign season to do, but it just isn't the way these things work. But we do things every day in our department. I think Tony's absolutely right. Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, these are communities that you can look at and see how they've grown out of similar challenges, and they are communities that we can learn from, and we're looking at learning from. When you look at the tech scene in Pittsburgh now, a lot of it biomed tech because of what Tony referenced earlier. So there's a lot of good communities that we can go and learn from. I've been to those communities. I go to the conferences and the economic clusters that we want to grow in with our high tech and semiconductors. I've been making those contacts. But I can't be held responsible for the actions of leaders in the past. I have a pretty good body of work over the last year people can hold me responsible for.
Well, let me jump in exactly on that point, and to take what I'm hearing from Mr. Malavenda in the broadcast portion and again here, and to kind of turn it into a kind of meta theme, if you will, which is that we're not going to get much new from you. I mean, that's sort of, if I could put it into one sentence. And so I'm going to put the question to you this way. How is a McMahon County leadership going to differ from a Mahoney County leadership?
I think you've started to see it. And I, again, when I hear these things, sometimes I wonder.
And that's not to suggest you'd be critical.
Joni's a great friend. I know Tony and Joni are good friends. That's why sometimes I'm surprised. It sounds like Tony's running against Joni. But the we've put forward – I've learned from many of the different leaders that I've been around and watched, whether it's been Mayor Minor, Mayor Driscoll, County Executive Mahoney, County Executive Pirro, different governors. And what I think you've seen is I have a clear platform. It's poverty, infrastructure, and economic development. And certainly that's what we focus our time on. And we have a strategy that we're building out day in and day out on that. And we're getting results. And the difference about being county executive to being a legislator or the chair of the legislature is a legislator, you get to fund an agenda. You don't get to go say, I want to invest $1 million in this, and you can just do that. You can't. You need an executive initiative to do that. Whereas as an executive, you drive the agenda. So even though I've been in county government, and I'm very proud of much of the work that I accomplished with Joni and with our partners at the state and the city and else, there's an opportunity now to look at what we've done and what we've done differently. I think in economic development, we've done a lot differently. We aren't essentially outsourcing our responsibilities to the state of New York. We're marching alongside the state of New York, talking to site selectors, talking to companies. We're out there developing the clusters we know we want to be in, and we know it makes sense here. We're out there marketing it. We're out there doing sales. Tony knows that. So we both have a business background in sales. So, I think there's things to see that are similar, because we believe that the county executive Mahoney did a great job with Onondaga Lake. We want to continue that growth, but we're more aggressive in certain areas, and we've made poverty the cornerstone of our administration.
So changing gears now, I want to talk about a different topic we didn't have time for in the broadcast portion. It's about the drawing of districts in the county legislature for the legislative seats, and I believe this will be coming up after the 2020 census, right?
The next legislature will draw districts.
After that, right, the one following that.
Yep.
So likely that this executive will play a role in that conversation. And the county's party registration figures have been trending, again, correct me if I'm wrong in any of this, trending Democratic in recent years relative to the past, though you also have to add in the presence of the Conservative Party and the Independence party that arguably helped to counteract that. And there are also, of course, my last check, 75,000 independents, registered independents, which is
the fastest growing party.
And the third biggest registration block by far. Yeah. Okay. Nonetheless, with all those numbers, the legislature is 12-5 Republican. So it's really lopsided in a way. And that brings up in people's minds, well, I think we need to take a different look at how we do our districting here. So Mr. Malavenda, would you back a different kind of districting process when this comes up again during this next county executive's term? Would you back a bipartisan or some kind of nonpartisan alternative to having the districting done by the legislature itself?
Unreservedly, yes, right? So I've actually done a press conference on this very issue. The legislature, there were Democratic legislators that proposed this just to discuss it, and it was shot down just to even just discuss this issue. We need an independent body. What this is more than it's not really a party thing as much as it is an incumbency thing. It's keeping people in the incumbency. And I do think that the gerrymandering, particularly of the city, right, has something to do with that concentrated poverty. It does. Because you look at the north side, they've got five different legislators chopping up that area. And then you have concentrations called stacking and packing, right? And then you pack a legislator into the south side. And you end up with such a minority that they essentially have no voice. You know, such a minority in power of the, say, the Democrats, of the losing side of that debate. So this is something that should have been done forever ago. And, you know, with all respect, many of the issues that I complain about with respect to how government is structured here don't apply just to Ryan. I'm not picking on him personally. It's a system here. But he has been in politics here for a long, long time. And politics is about money. And when you're in the legislature, you're talking about money. And where your values are is where you put the money, right? And what I see is we've had this trend of this area that's been a downward spiral for many, many decades before Ryan was ever even involved. But he's been here. And I think it's a little – when I hear things like, well, it's this funny season and stuff, that's right, it is a funny season. All of a sudden, there's all these little sugars getting passed around the county. What's going to happen after Election Day? And as far as gerrymandering goes, it's part of a three-legged stool, really. So one that supports county government, that supports incumbents to just stay in power forever. You have these ridiculously gerrymandered districts is one hand. Then you have the pay-to-play, which you had mentioned earlier, and I want to take this time to mention this. It is ridiculous.
Well, let's come back to that one because we're going to lose the thread here. So.
All right. Well, it's pay-to-play, and then there's cronyism. It's like using county jobs – using jobs as a means of political favors. This has been done forever, since I was a little kid, right? And county employees know this. You know, and I think it creates a bad employment culture just for the county employees themselves because they know who's gotten what job because of what. And it doesn't inspire. It's not leadership. In terms of it's just not a good management model. You wouldn't want to run your company on that.
All right, so there's a lot to unpack there, but first let's start with the districting issue.
So, Grant, if you look at the numbers, and we're all kind of students of this when you're doing this, but the reality is there is a lot more Democrats in the city of Syracuse, and then there's more Republicans right now in the suburbs. The difference when you look at this and why the weakest argument for this is, geez, there's 27,000 more Democrats. There should be more Democrats on the ledge. That you're making huge assumptions that people don't vote their candidate, which we know locally they do, because there's 11 out of the 17 ledge districts have more Democrats than Republicans today. And secondly, the population, there's more population power in the suburbs. So the suburbs are going to have more legislative districts no matter what, who's drawing the districts, because that's what your legal responsibility are. So look, I voted for an independent redistricting resolution when I was chairman of the legislature that failed. I'm willing to look at it again. I've made a promise that I'm going to stay in my own lane during this process, but what our role is, we'll play it. But I did say in front of – last time Tony and I were together is that if there is clear evidence of gerrymandering where they're trying to make things look a lot different than what they are for the gain of a political party, I'll veto the lines. And so that's what the county executive can do. If you want to draw the lines, you got to run for county legislature. But we're going to veto it. But it's very – there's 36,000 more Democrats than Republicans in the city of Syracuse. There's 27,000 more Democrats in the county. That's city-based. When you only represent a certain number of the population, no matter what way you draw it, it's tough to make that number grow by registration. So –
But it would be possible, though, for you as county executive to come out publicly very strongly in favor of this.
Well,
that might change what your Republican colleagues in the legislature would be
willing
to
have that
to
conversation.
Do.
Again, I have a record of that. Mm-hmm. But I also think when you look at some of the organizations that the Democratic Party are saying are nonpartisan, the Republican Party doesn't agree with that. So you have to figure out what does nonpartisan really mean and, bring that together. And I've had a history of bringing all sides together. And we're willing to have that conversation.
Okay. So now the other issue that got brought up was
cronyism.
The cronyism and the jobs and how the sort of thing cycles around.
You're talking about patronage, right? And patronage is that's nothing, not new to any level of government. Sure. And what I've said and what I have practiced is that I do not have and will not hire any of my family members who do not take a civil service test like every other person that has to. So if a distant relative of that carries the burden of having my last name passes a civil service test and gets in the top three, they can come work in county government. But I have not hired any family members because of that. I think Tony's right. At times, this is a practice that everybody uses. Your Democratic Party uses it all the time. When they ran City Hall, it was used perfectly. I was there. Where it really gets obnoxious is when you start seeing family members and friends of families getting these spots. Because Tony's right. You need the best and the brightest in these spots to drive good outcomes.
I want to say, add to that, though, that, yes, I believe that that's been done in the city as well. Again, I don't think it's so much a party thing as it is an incumbency thing. It's a way to preserve your power. And it's not just family members. That may be the most egregious, but I don't worry about – that's not what would concern me, let's say, about Ryan because he's got 8 billion family members. It's really more using it for a political gain where it may not be going to a family member, but, you don't want someone to challenge one of your party members, right? Or, you give someone's son a job and so they support you in your campaign. That's the kind of thing that happens. And that's actually what I believe is even worse in some ways than hiring your family member. But obviously, you should be qualified to take a job.
But it doesn't sound like the two of you are really disagreeing on this. You both acknowledge there's a history there and it needs to be done differently.
No, it's just that I've been calling it out and I haven't heard that here. Okay. I haven't heard it from anybody locally. I haven't heard it from him. It's just like the gerrymandering. I did ask Ryan to come out and support me when you can have a computer draw these districts, right? And there's other ways to make sure we could almost look at – we can look at everything here from term limits to maybe changing the ledge elections so they're not every 2 years. Maybe they should be every 4 years. There's a lot of the way government works here that is essentially old-fashioned, and it results – the proof of it is when you look at the voter turnout in these off-year county elections – they're atrocious. They're crazy bad. They're so low. Numbers of 20% or something. Sometimes single digits.
We actually do better than a lot of other locations, believe it or not. But
we're not doing well.
Being a former chairman of the legislative branch of government, I'm going to let the legislative responsibility stick there or else I'm going to really make some of my colleagues on both sides angry. But we're willing to have discussions.
Okay. And so let's move on. The one issue that Mr. Malavenda, you said you wanted to return to was the issue of the money and the campaign.
Yes, I do.
Let's talk about that briefly. And then for the last thing, I have one quick sort of lightning round type of question for each of you. But go ahead.
Okay. So I just want to address the, he can write a check. And here's the thing.
Well, let's start with the facts. So how much money have you loaned your campaign as of today?
I don't have the total. I put in an initial amount of $400,000.
Okay.
And then we'll be doing more reporting soon, so it'll be out soon.
So it'll be higher than that.
It's going to be higher than that.
Okay.
And the thing is that that's just what you need to get to the table. So the last Democratic challenger to Joni 4 years ago spent $11,000. I don't even remember what her campaign fund was like. Ryan, like I said, raised before I was even in the race, before there was a race where the conventional wisdom was there was going to just be a name on a ballot, Ryan had $450,000 in the bank. Who can challenge that? So if you don't set a pile of money afire of your own, right, there's no way you can mount a reputable challenge. I'm the first Democrat that I recall ever mounting the kind of media campaign that you need to win, that you had just to be competitive. And no one has ever done it before. And this is a problem. So, and it shouldn't be that it takes a guy like me who basically cashed in on a lifetime of work and success, who I'm able to do this, right? It should be everybody should be able to do this. We need campaign finance reform. We need some form of public campaign finance so somebody can get in a race and raise at least enough to get some name recognition. So even if they lose, maybe they could turn around and win the next time, you know, someone
and
who's younger.
That's a huge issue that we'll have to take up with the Supreme Court, among other places. So, yeah.
Well, there are things that are legal. As long as you can opt in and opt out. The city of Seattle is doing it, right? Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Warren's been talking about it, where you get vouchers. Suffolk County has public campaign financing in New York. That's a New York State county. Mm-hmm. And the city of New York limits corporate donations, right? So we need that.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have thoughts about the campaign finance? Any ending thoughts on this before we move on to a different topic?
I don't believe we should raise property taxes to pay for political mailers, though.
Okay,
but we are paying for it. In the end, we pay for it because I can tell you any corporation or their executives or their wives, like I say, that put that money in, when they figure out a bid, when they build a county, that money's coming out. They're not doing it out of altruism.
That all these other executives are doing it, but that's not the way you thought when you were doing it with Mayor Minor?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I just think that's a very sinister view of these other executives.
What I'm saying is that when you take here's the difference, right? I've been working with the city of Syracuse for 40 years, all right? So you're taking one donation to my neighbor who lives next to me, right? Wait a second. You're taking a – getting?
No, I'm not
so
suggesting that at all.
So when you get $40,000 –
He's suggesting exactly the opposite.
Yeah,
I
don't think that's why you did that. And I don't think –
arguing about extrapolating that to other people.
People only support me because of that is the same thing, Tony. It's offensive.
Well, I'm sorry that you feel offended by it. But the bottom line is that people that come here – they look for a tax break or a pilot, and all of a sudden you see a pattern. Here's a donation. The core company comes here. They give you $5,000. 2 days later, they get a pilot.
Tony, you got to have your team fact check some research there. For Ryan McMahon. McMahon for Onondaga County's never taken money from core. That's a fact. I'm sorry.
All right, let's move on.
To something that's completely non-controversial, which is the impeachment of the president. But it's a strange question. But I want to ask each of you this. This will be the way we end. It's a little bit of a political barometer of sorts to get a sense of where each of you are coming from. So, County Executive McMahon, I'll start with you. I know it's not a county issue at all, but do you support – and I want to make it clear to our listeners, because things change quickly in this realm. We are talking on Monday, September 30th. Do you support what the Congress is doing currently with bringing formal impeachment inquiries and hearings with the president?
I think the president's comments were inappropriate and stupid, quite frankly. And so I think that this to take up impeachment at this moment in time is confusing to me, because you have a presidential election in front of the ballot box, really, what, 12 months away. Mm-hmm. So that's confusing, because I think you do risk further dividing the country through this process, especially considering how we probably know the Senate's probably not going to do anything the House says it's going to do. I think the ultimate way to handle this is at the ballot box. But look, I think questions are going to be asked. More information will come out. I'm going to reserve judgment on that. I think people should be measured in this process.
Mr. Malavenda, where are you on this?
Yeah, it's a tough one, because we do have an election coming up, and I am concerned that it's a diversion right now. But I've been calling out this president consistently since he was elected on his stupid remarks. This isn't the first one. He made racist remarks. I called him out when he asked Congresswoman Omar that she should go back to her old country. I asked Ryan to do the same. I mean,
you never talked to me about that, Tony.
Not personally, but we called it out in a press conference. I'm sure your team was reading it.
All right?
And we, you know, this is a president that keeps doing this. And this particular problem, it seems to me, is so egregious that while I do think it will probably fail in the Senate and it will be a diversion, there is something to be said for Congress almost abrogating its responsibility if it doesn't at least do the inquiry, because this is heavy stuff now.
So as the last word, I'm going to give it to you, County Executive, just so you can clarify again your position on the president, because Mr. Malavenda seemed to suggest that.
Look, this is a week old. Let's let these hearings haven't even started yet. Part of the problem is when you have members of Congress that are so partisan on both sides, it's tough to trust that the diligence and something like this happens. This has happened how many times in our country's history, Grant? Three? So this, I think we're, with cable media, we sensationalize things often here. So I think people should really take a measured approach. And if the facts are there, I think the country will be in a position to rally around the facts. But right now, I just caution people to be measured. Do your diligence, do your job, represent your taxpayers. But the timing of this is not great timing for our country. There's going to be a decision at the ballot box, which can put this all to bed very soon.
Okay, so that's really all the time we have. I really appreciate, first of all, both of you taking this very large chunk of additional time to continue the conversation. Once again, that was the two candidates vying for the Onondaga County executive position this coming November, the incumbent Republican Ryan McMahon and the Democratic challenger Tony Malavenda. Again, thanks to both of you very much.
Thanks, Grant. Thank you.
The Campbell Conversations was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Associate producers include Sarah Forland and Zane Aga. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit us online at wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations or download the show as a podcast from iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.